Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Right, today's Match of My Life guest is a boxer who many have labelled the nicest guy in the sport. He created one of the feel-good stories of 2015 when he was crowned the WBA lightweight champion. Maybe against the odds people thought at the time. It's Anthony Million Dollar Crawler. Morning, Anthony.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for your company. Great to have you on board. Let's just get the Million Dollar Crawler bit out of the way. Who gave you the title?
It's, I say it all the time. It's nothing to do with my bank account or anything like that. But all it is was, do you remember the Million Dollar Baby? Mm. It's one of my favourite films. That, and yeah, it just made Million Dollar Baby, Million Dollar Crawler, the rhyme. And that was it. It was obviously it came with a little bit of pressure, the nickname, certainly early on in my career.
Well, shame it didn't translate into the bank account.
Yeah, no, one day.
Yeah, so that pressure. But let's give an idea to the listeners of Anthony Crawler and his background, because boxing was very much in the blood, wasn't it? Your dad was a boxer.
Yeah, he was. My dad was an ex-professional boxer, and you know, once he'd retired, I mean, he'd been retired quite a bit, but he was just keeping fit. Like a lot of ex-pros do, just hitting the bags, and he'd go to it was the Fox Amateur Boxing Club. He'd have a set of keys there as well, and basically, there was no one to mind me. There's no one to mind me, so I got dragged along as well. But obviously, you pick up things, and then when I remember that was probably about eight or so, and then stop going. Like I say, you when you're a kid, you don't really pay too much attention. But obviously, I picked up a little bit, and then I remember thinking you had to be 11 to fight. Mm. Everyone was playing football. I was playing football myself, but you know, I knew as soon as 11, I was always, you know, mad for competition. And I went back about a month before my 11th birthday, and within a few months, I was fighting. So it was a bit of a natural, because within a few weeks, I was sparring, I was medical, and then yeah, I was fighting.
Did your dad want you to be a boxer, or was he a little bit against the idea, having experienced it himself?
No, I think he was proud. He's never been a pushy parent, certainly far from that. I know when I went back to the gym, it was my mum who took me. But, you know, he's always supported me. He's hardly missed a fight, you know, amateur or pro. But he was never pusher, never one bit pusher, because a lot of people think, oh, because the dad did it, is he trying to live it again for his son's, you know, for his son's life? No, he's certainly not like that. But, he was proud, and I decided to make boxing, you know, my main sport. I was a decent cross-country runner back then, played football, not as good as what I would have liked to have been. But, I think he was pleased that I picked that as my main sport.
Your remarkable story, including your relationship with your dad, your love of Manchester United and the boxing career, is all categorised in your brand new book, Nice Guys Can Win. Great, great book. If you can get hold of it out there, have a look at
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Just in terms of the love of football and the love of Manchester United, were you ever torn between the two sports, or was there absolutely no way that Anthony Crawler was ever going to be a footballer?
No, I enjoy playing football, but I realised from an early age it was... I was much better at boxing. I had a much better chance of making a career out of being a boxer than what I did as a footballer. I think it was one of them, like, from like pretty early, really. A lot of, like, say, a lot of kids dream of scoring a goal at Old Trafford, Wembley, you know, wherever it may be for the team that they follow. I was always thinking about being a world champion. And that's what it was, really. Like I say, I love my football, but I was never going to make a career out of it.
Your path to that world title was certainly not easy. And I think if you look back and probably write in the book, you've probably thought long and hard about how many hurdles you had to get over to get to that point. Did it seem easier to think about it at the very early stages when people were telling you were a young, aspiring, talented boxer? Were people in your ear saying you could go right to the top, Anthony?
Yeah, right from the start, people said you could, people close to me, you could, you know, with a little bit of luck, because that's what you need. You do need a little bit of luck in any career, in my opinion. You know, people say, oh, you make your own luck, and you do to a sense, but you also need a little bit of luck. with that little bit of luck, you know, you could go on to win a world title. But my aim when I turned professional was I had two, you know, my two goals was to become a world champion, win a world title, and to get an house paid off. I just always thought, you know, if you can get an house paid off, life's just a little bit easier for you. I've watched it with my mum and dad, like, for 30 years. Not long ago, they finished theirs off and watched them graft hard for 30 years. Listen, they've just got my dad's a postman, my mum works in the supermarket. And I just thought, well, if I can get it done, you know, before I'm 30, then life's just that little bit easier then, isn't it, for your family of your own and stuff like that. So that was what the goals was. But you just mentioned it then, there was so many, you know, speed bumps, there's been ups, downs, and there was times where, I think he mentions it in the book, with the very first chat, so my career was on the line.
So this is the John Watson fight, isn't it?
No, that's the Kieran Farrell fight.
Of course, yep. Sorry, go ahead.
This was after the John Watson fight, but before the John Watson fight, people had written me off and, you know, listen, they're entitled to their opinion as well. I boxed my first fight on national television. I lost to a journeyman. And there was people who was, you know, I had aspirations of becoming a world champion, and there was people that always stuck with me who said, world champion, he might win a central area title. You know, he might win an area title. And it's nice now, it's satisfying to think to them people, well, you know, I proved you wrong. But at the time, I understand, you know, I sort of half understand where they was coming from.
Yeah, because with some of those early fights, you were stepping into an arena which could make or break you. So let's start with that Watson one. So that was for the vacant British lightweight title, wasn't it? Described as a contender for fight of the year. Went to 9 rounds. How much was on the line when you fought him?
With that fight, it was sort of a fight where there wasn't much to lose for me, because I stepped in at, I think it was just short of 2 weeks' notice. I jumped up a weight. And that was it really. So I seen that as like going into the Lion's Den as well. I was got John's a Liverpool lad. I was loving it all, you know, the pressure of going into the Lion's Den sort of thing. But I remember taking a good few hundred up, you know, at a few weeks' notice. So I always remember getting into the ring saying to my trainer, I said, don't know if we're in Manchester or Liverpool here, you know. But that was, you know what, that's one of my proudest moments, that, because John's a real good lad, good fighter, and to win a British title, anyone you mentioned earlier, you know, my dad being an ex-professional, anyone who knows boxing just knows how sort of important that the Lonsdale belt, how prestigious that Lonsdale belt is. So to win a British title at a few weeks' notice, I won an awful lot of people money that night because I was an underdog as well. So it was just, it was a perfect night. It was a perfect night. And, you know, I finished it with a good shot, with one of the best shots I threw in my career. It was a great fight, and I beat a top fighter. So that fight, that's, you know, that's one of my fondest memories in boxing.
What was that pride at winning the British title? And you're right, all boxers do say it. It seems to hold as much significance as maybe a world title belt, in some ways, doesn't it?
It's a lovely, lovely belt. Anyone who, you know, obviously there's a world title, which is the ultimate aim, but a British title, without a doubt, is the nicest belt in boxing, in world boxing, you know. It's, I don't know, if you win, you defend it 3 times, you then get one for keeps. They're worth a lot of money, but it's more than what they're worth. It's just sort of having that. There's not too many people get a Lonsdale belt keep outright. And in one way, that's one of my only regrets, where after losing it, then having a chance to win it back, but then getting messed about. I never sort of went to win it back and defended it another time to keep it outright. But that was just the path that I was on. So if I did that, maybe the world title wouldn't have come, which was more important, which was the overall goal. So, yeah, but anyone who knows boxing knows just how important that British belt is.
You love sparky fights against Scousers, not least, of course, Derry Matthews. So a year after winning this belt, that was February 2011, April 2012, and there you are in the ring with Derry Matthews, the ultimate scrapper. Yeah. How were you in your head at that time of your life?
No good. There was no excuses. But what I did learn that night, I learned a valuable lesson. And I mean, when I watched the fight back, I was cringing sort of what I was doing. But Derry picked out a great shot, a really good shot to put me over. I mean, I got up and then the fight was stopped a few rounds later when I was coming back into it. When I was coming back into the fight. But with Derry, what he'd done that night, I thought I could just walk through Derry. And I just sort of abandoned my defence. I'm known for having a good defence. And that night, my defence was almost non-existent, walking in straight lines. And against Derry, a tough lad, but not only a tough lad, a lad who can really punch. It's obviously the wrong tactics. And like I say, I learned a valuable lesson that night. I still argue, saying it was stopped far too early. But it was a blessing in disguise. But at the time, it felt like, it was in Oldham, which is only a few miles away from my house, and it was a packed out leisure centre. It was to lose my British title. The only time I've been stopped in my career, it was.
Were you low that night?
Felt like the end of the world.
Yeah. What were the conversations that night? How low were you when you lost to Derry? I mean, what effect did it have on you personally?
I remember going back to the house and going back to my mum and dad's house, and my dad. I sort of mentioned this in the book. My dad's there and he's saying, "Aunt, just watch this. Look what you've done wrong." And I'm thinking, "Oh, this isn't the time I want to be watching after I've just been beat on Sky Sports." And I mean, but I watched the fight back straight away, so it done me a favour really. And it was as hard as it was to take, and it was hard. I was thinking, "Oh, I was seeing my little brother. He was a bit upset, you know." It was tough. But like you say, I look back now and I think that was the most valuable lesson in my career, without a doubt, because I was due to fight Gavin Reese the fight after that, and if I would have gone in with those, would have got away with it that night, gone in to fight Gavin Reese with those same tactics, it could have ended much worse.
Yeah, you've always had this relationship, haven't you, with Liverpool? So you know, we're talking fighters there like Derry Matthews, or even fighting in Liverpool itself, in some sort of weird way. Have you always quite enjoyed that M62? Relationship that you've endured throughout your boxing?
Really, yeah, I really have, from an amateur, one thing I always say about Liverpool is that what I really respect is they school them very well from the amateurs, you know, and I love the way the scouts just get behind, you know, the local championships will be packed out supporting the lads, and I really like that about them. Obviously I train with scousers, and it's just, listen, the only rivalry for me is with the football. Do you know what I mean? We have a bit of joking around, but with me is with the football, and that's a very fierce rivalry. But no, I respect, I know a lot of fighters coming out of Liverpool, and a lot of good fighters, like you say, right from the amateurs right through to the professionals. So I've enjoyed it all. Like I say, boxed at the Echo, boxed at the Olympia so many times. Good record there. Everton Park. Austin Rawlinson in Speak. I remember boxing there.
There's plenty more places
in Liverpool than that, but no, I've always enjoyed it.
And of course the Smith brothers are very close friends of yours as well, aren't they? Have you all sort of fed off each other?
Yeah, of course, definitely in the gym it's very competitive, and that's what we do, we push each other on. And do you know, I'm proud sometimes. Some people say, "Oh, you like the Fish Smith brother," and I look at them as brothers, like that. I get, you know, very nervous. I get probably more nervous for their fights than what I would my own. And they're good lads, and I think what they've achieved in boxing is unbelievable. You mentioned before about, you know, fathers being proud and stuff, but I think for four brothers to win a British title, what we've just been going on about, is an unbelievable achievement.
Right, you mentioned the fight with Kieran Farrell, and it was a crunch fight for you, and of course there was a fair degree of sadness as well that went round after the final bell. So just set the scene on this Kieran Farrell fight. If you'd have lost this fight, were you considering exiting boxing at the time?
Yeah, I had a job waiting for me Monday morning, but I'd like to think I would have never wanted to quit boxing, but I certainly wouldn't have been able to have been a full-time professional. Put it that way, I would have been working as well, and who knows then what would have happened. I'm pretty sure, depending on how long it would have lasted, that I wouldn't have achieved what I've gone on to achieve since that fight, as for the fight itself, not as many people will got to see it. Well, very few, because it wasn't on television. It was streamed over the internet. It was a bit of a Manchester derby, but other than the people who watched on that and the people in attendance who didn't get to see it, it was a really good fight. It was a contender for fight of the year in a lot of people's eyes, but it was overshadowed, of course, what happened to Kieran after the final bell.
Yeah, so after the bell, this was December 2012, he collapsed, was rushed to hospital, he suffered a brain injury and would no longer be able to box. And I would imagine for you, that's a pretty hard thing to stomach at the time.
Oh, it was the darkest point in not just my boxing career, but in my life as well. I mention it sort of there, but in the book, but I always remember seeing as Kieran was getting stretchered out of the ring. I remember his mum was absolutely breaking her heart, and it's something that'll never ever leave me. You know, she was clinging on to her son as he's unconscious. It's very hard, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone. And it took a long time for me to go and see Kieran. We're good mates now. We'll meet up probably next week and I'll grab some food and that. But
it's very hard to imagine how you dealt with it at the time. You feel like you've inflicted something that's life changing on someone, but he has come through it.
Yeah, and he's doing brilliant, Kieran is. And I thought at the time I fell out of love with boxing for the first time. Do you know? And I was just thinking, you know. For a few weeks and that, it wasn't easy to, you know, in the boxing gym and stuff like that, and certainly sparring or anything like that. I was getting ready for a fight myself, the secondary fight. It was a horrible experience, but one that we both come through and gone on to achieve what we wanted to achieve. Like I say, Kieran's doing really well now, putting on shows, getting a good stable of fighters, and he's doing unbelievable. He's got a British Empire medal. He's very inspiring what he's done.
Radio City Talk.
Match of my life.
Okay, let's get back into our match of my life with Anthony Crawler. We've been through some of his early fights, but of course things were to pick up rapidly in the last 7 years. Anthony, who, looking back, do you think has been the single biggest influence on your boxing career?
There's a few. Listen, my trainers played a huge part in that for bringing me on and working hard with me. Plays a huge part in that. My family is a big influence. You know, obviously I've got a little boy now. He's four. That everything I sort of do is to try and make his life a little bit easier. Just to make people proud, really. Like, say, my mum, my dad, partner. It's just my family being my other main motivation. And those nights that I've had at Manchester Arena are nights that I'll always remember. And hopefully a lot of other people will remember well. And I know that boxing is a short career, so I know it's not going to go on forever. So I just want as many as those nights while I still can.
Your mum, your partner, are they ones that are happy to watch ringside?
My partner is. She's actually really cool for her about it. You know, she just understands it's my job. But my mum, funny enough, she's a huge boxing fan. Honestly, she's a huge boxing fan, but never comes to watch me. Now, early on in the career, she'd come, but she didn't watch. And she's, you know, as soon as sort of I was coming out, she'd just go outside. But then it got worse and worse. And now, I know, like, the fights have got bigger, but as it's gone on, she's got worse and worse, so she comes nowhere near. And I think she starts getting nervous fight week. My mummy's, she loves the boxing, but she never watches me.
That relationship with your family, I mean, detailed in the new book, Nice Guys Can Win, so important to you. It sounds like you're family man first.
Yeah, family's everything to me. Family's absolutely everything, and that's, like you say, who I do it for, and it's the most important thing for me, family first. I always say that. And I think we've always been a real close-knit family. And I think that's from being young, so it's been installed in me, really.
So Crollan Matthews, Mark II, took place in March 2013. What was it, a fight you needed convincing to be involved in?
Yeah, no, it didn't need convincing. The moment it was offered, then it was, there we go. It was, I remember being, obviously, not long after the Kieran Farrell fight, and I wasn't sort of thinking, I knew obviously I was going to box someone, but I didn't need to think twice about the fight. That was the fight I wanted, to fight Derry, to put things right. And it was a fight that, obviously, it was a draw. It was a fight that I thought I'd definitely done enough to win. But it was a great night, you know, great atmosphere. I enjoyed going into the Lions Den again. And I think everyone who came to watch us did. There was a little bit of crowd trouble that was unfortunate, but other than that, it was a great fight. I think me and Derry got fight of the year for that one.
It was unbelievable. I mean, I was there. I mean, the atmosphere was extraordinary. It was a night for warriors in the ring, and you know, you mentioned a bit of the trouble, but the majority of people created just one of the most amazing occasions.
Great atmosphere. Yeah. A lot of the back and forth was good natured and, you know, Manchester and Merseyside and stuff. But it was a lot of it was just in fun, and it made for a great atmosphere. And I thought, both of us put on a good fight. And, it's a shame, really. It's a shame that we didn't get to do it again.
Number three, yeah.
But, yeah, number three, a lot of people wanted to see. But it was, with that fight, it was... I mean, you know, Derry mentioned it. We got literally, you know, we got peanuts compared to what we should have got, really. But it was a fight that I think we both wanted, and obviously we was both disappointed with the draw. Both thought we'd done enough, but it was a good fight. It's a good fight to look back on and watch over the year.
A draw was the fair result.
Yeah, I thought I'd done enough. Derry probably thought he'd done enough. We both thought we'd done enough, I think. But listen, if you're in a fight like that, you both leave it all in there, you're going to probably feel like that.
Yeah, it's interesting you say you got peanuts, because actually if you look at your boxing career and you sort of span a little bit of an era where boxes weren't being remunerated at the levels which they are now. So for a fight like that, if that had been held this year, you would imagine it's far more of a payday, isn't it, for a boxer?
A lot more. It's someone I'm saying peanuts, I don't want to be disrespectful. Mm. You know, there's people who work hard and don't get paid what they should all the time. So I don't mean it to sound disrespectful like that. But I mean for the fight we put on, but for the amount of people who come to watch it at the arena. And listen, I joke about it with Eddie Earn. He jokes about it with me back. But at the time, I wasn't signed to Eddie and neither was Derry. So that might have had something to do with it. But it's just something I look back on the career, and it was a great night.
Right, so all this is leading up basically to, you know, your world title shot, Crollan Perez. But in between that, of course, Gavin Rees, the Bolton Arena. This is June 2013. And, you know, for you fighting in Bolton, is that a little bit more of a home fight?
Yeah, it was certainly more a home fight for me than what it was for Gavin. But that, I think you see, it was a fight I won on 12-round points decision. But I think you see my reaction after the fight, and that was one of my biggest wins in my career, because that was really got the ball rolling. It was one of the, possibly the biggest in a way, because it got the ball rolling. It started making me believe Gavin was an ex-world champion. And again, I was brought in as the opponent then for that fight. Even though it was in Bolton, I was brought in as the opponent. And it's something that, you know, I look... That night, I remember my partner, she was heavily pregnant. We had a baby who was due in a few months. And I knew going into that fight that if I won the fight, then I'd get the contract with Matchroom, Eddie Earn. But more importantly, it'd then allow me to get money for a deposit for a house for the both, you know, for the both of us and the new arrival. It was just so important what was riding on it. When I said again, well, if it didn't, then the contract wouldn't have come through. Maybe I would have had to start working as well to try and pay bills and stuff. Because obviously, my problem at the time, I was living at my partner's parents' house, and obviously, you know, being a proud man, I know there's people out there who have no choice. So I'm not saying like that. I wanted to try and, you know, build a family home of my own. Mm. And I knew the importance in the win that night of what was riding on it. And I think you see the reaction when I get the decision. I was, wow, so happy. It was, but yeah, no, it was a great night for us. It was another tough fight. It was another good fight, actually, as well. And I think it really helped sort of build the fan base as well. It was loads enjoyed going to the Echo and then being Bolton. It was growing and growing.
You've certainly had a lot of fights where you've gone the distance or had to wait for decisions to be made in the ring. You've probably got quite used to that. Is that one of the most nerve-wracking moments you can possibly imagine?
Yeah, it is, because, you know, you feel, especially if it's a close one, but you feel you've done enough, it's... It's just thinking, you're asking everyone, what do you think?
Yeah.
And yeah, it is a little bit. But that time, it was, I said I had no idea. And then I think the MC at the time, he'd half read the cards out wrong, in the sense that, you know, he said me first and he just read it in the wrong order. So just before he announced my name, I knew I'd won. But
for a second, a split second, you were thinking,
yeah, you worry,
something's
yeah,
gone
just
horribly
think
wrong
it's
here.
It's been a hard fight. I just, yeah, just won that win.
When everything has rested on it. And of course, that relationship with Matter in boxing, which this secured, would go on to be so important for you at a time where boxing has been taken to a different level. Did you understand back then how that could influence?
Of course. I knew that Eddie had a massive platform, and what he was doing at the time, he was sort of one of, you know, he was seen as a breath of fresh air to a lot of, you know, to boxing and the shows he was putting on. And yeah, I was I knew I wanted to be part of that movement, and winning that, getting the contract, that's exactly what it was.
Radio City Talk. Match of my life.
A lot of good sporting books out there at the moment, but one of the must reads is Anthony Crawler's autobiography, Nice Guys Can Win, written by a good friend of mine, Don McGuinness. It's fantastic, and it details so much in his career, including, of course, that pivotal world title win. And this was 2015, but of course, 2015 started with a real low, a low that most sports people, men and women, wouldn't expect to have to suffer. So Anthony Crawler confronting burglars and was then attacked and left in hospital. Anthony, let's pick the story up here. So January 2015.
No, December it was.
Was it December?
Almost, yes, the end of 2014. I was due to fight for my first world title in January 2015. And
right.
Just a few weeks before that. So, do you know what? I'll check the date, but... He's very close to the anniversary. He's very close to the anniversary.
I was
so.
Going
to
say, we're virtually on it, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, it's... I'll double check the date, but yeah, so that was the end of 2014.
So that was December 2014. Give us the exact circumstances. What happened?
Yeah, so I'm in training for my world title fight, first world title fight, which is in January, and I'm training probably a little bit ahead of schedule, so trainer Joe Gallagher said, you know, I don't want you to do the track tonight. I want you to go home, just chill out, spend a bit of time with Fran and Jesse, and we'll fire up again for another big session tomorrow. You're in a really good place. I don't want to, you know, get there too soon. I'm really happy where you are. So, right, that was it. And I remember it. I remember sort of going home and pulling up outside my house. It was obviously December. It was dark nights. But it wasn't... Must have been what, five-ish or something like that. I forget the time again now, but it was dark anyway. And pulled up at the house, and the next door neighbor's alarms started going off. So, you know, straight away you're thinking. I was looking and thought, oh, I don't look as if it's him. I thought I'll just ring him and tell him the alarm's going off. And his partner had just gone to the gym, so. And I actually joked. I said, I'll just check. I'll make sure you're not getting burgled. So I put my gym bags in. Walked to my back garden, and you know, you just look over because it was still going off. And now I was looking with like the torch on my phone, that I'm looking at the patio doors, and I'm thinking, is that smashed or not? And then as I'm looking, you know, a burglar pops his head out. So, you know, doing the right thing, you know, shouting at him to get out. So I run round to to catch him.
Without thinking what you're going to do. It's just natural instinct.
No, yeah, just
instinct.
To catch him. Because I remember at the time they was getting married. They was close to a wedding and I thought, I don't know what, savings or jewellery or whatever, do you know. But I would have done it anyway. But just the fact if someone's, you know, breaking into your neighbour's house, you try and stop them, in my opinion. But yeah, that was going for me as well. So I'm running. And anyway, I like an idiot, I ran the long way around anyway, but I thought there's no way that he's getting away. And then when I seen there was two of them. So I've carried on running down, I'm talking to them, you know, saying, listen, you drop whatever you've got, give me whatever you've got. And they're running and they realised they weren't going to get away from me. I'd had the night off the track, but I ended up doing a bit more running anyway. So I'm running after them. And anyway, I've caught up with them. I think they realised they weren't going to get away. So they ran down the side of a garden. And the pair of them were sort of cornered in. And I remember thinking, well, I can't really walk back with two of them in my hand. Do you know? In my arms, I'd like to think I can look after myself, but that might be a little bit of hard work. And so I sort of thought, just let one of them go away, and I was just going to take one back. And he was going to have to, you know, squeal on his mate. And, you know, I just wanted back whatever they took. And as he started climbing a fence, and a bit of bad luck to me as he's climbing the fence, there just happened to be a concrete slab that was loose, and on the blind side, that come down over my head. And, you know, knocked me to my knees. And I knew straight away, I thought, there's no way he's punched me. I knew exactly in my head when I'd gone back, I said, he put a slab or a brick or something over my head. I wasn't knocked out or nothing like that. And I was literally down on my knee for a few seconds. And the other burglar who had in the corner, he started climbing the fence and I jumped up to grab him, but he was already halfway over and the sort of momentum took him off, so I was fuming that the pair of them had got away. It worked out they'd not got away with nothing, so that was good. But I remember I was straight away, I couldn't put any weight on my foot, and I'm thinking, something's not right here, and then blood's running down into my face. So a friend and a neighbour, they'd sort of come up the street and just saw me obviously stumbling and face covered in blood, got wide open. So anyway, we won't go on too much, but in the house, next door neighbours, mother had come round and she's like, you know, you need to get to hospital. The hospital was taking, the ambulance was taking ages. You know, it wouldn't stop bleeding. She happened to be a nurse, so she was doing a real good job. My head wouldn't stop bleeding. My mum's come round. She's shouting at me. She's gone mad at me. Anyway, my uncle rushed me to hospital because he won't come in. And then when you know, waiting straight away, I think a few people sort of recognised in the hospital, and everyone was like, what's going on? Anyway, x-rays, stuff like that, you know, whatever, however long later. At this point, I'm still seeing people fighting in 4 weeks.
You're still thinking about fighting it. That's what's in your head.
I can't run, you know, I can't run this week and sparring, but if I can wear a face bar head guard, and I'm planning it in my head. And when I think back now, I knew that my friend had come round just for tickets. So he was round for tickets, my mate. And then at the time, you know, he was round, you know, people had saw what was going on. And they just didn't have the heart to tell me, listen, there's no way you're fighting. But in my head, I'm planning my training sessions around the injuries. And I'm saying, that's just twisted the ankle. And anyway, gone to the hospital anyway, I found out, got a fractured skull, and ankle's broken a few places. So at that point, it felt like the end of the world. It really did. It was, I remember it broke my heart, it did. And
so close to your dream, close, and you're thinking,
that was it.
This could be it, gone forever. There must have been a moment where you thought, I might not box again here.
Of course, and definitely. Listen, a fractured skull isn't the best injury to have for a boxer, for sure, is it? So it was just worrying times, really worrying times. Obviously, you get over the heartbreak and that, but then it was, am I going to be able to fight again? And we mentioned earlier, you know, you've moved into an house and you're supporting a family, you've got mortgage and bills to pay, and I'm just thinking, what will I do if I can't box? So that was it, really. It was took away from us.
So, unbelievably, you do step into the ring in July 2015. So you were scheduled to fight Richard Abril.
Abril, yeah.
And instead you fight Darlys Perez, 18th of July 2015. In what looked to me one of the great injustices.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it on the night or even when I saw it again. Did it feel like that? Because 6 months after this attack, you produced the performance of a lifetime where it looks like it. And you're not giving it on points. It's given us the draw.
Yeah, it was. Do you know what though? It wasn't as hard to take as what everyone thought, because I was just happy to be back boxing again. I thought that my career had been taken away from me, and I remember walking out at the arena thinking, "Oh my God, I'm the luckiest man in the world to be able to walk out in front of this hometown for a world title, an arena where I grew up, going your Ricky Hatton nights." But before that, Nazir Muhammad, Joe Calzaghe, Michael Broder, I was there, to watch him, and now it's my turn to walk out and fight for a world title. Got an amazing reception, from everyone. And after the fight, I remember thinking, I was really unlucky, but I remember thinking I'd definitely done enough. That was hard, but I remember just thinking I've got to be thankful that I've got my chance to fight again. And I thought, there's a great chance that I'll get the rematch because of how controversial it is. Mm. And, thankfully, that's what I got. I got a rematch, and it went from... I remember being away after it, not long after it, with my family. And it was sort of... There's people... I went from being known as the boxer who got hit over the head, the concrete slab, and to the boxer who got robbed of a world title. And I just always thought, there's no way I can have this for the rest of my life. I've got to go out and I've got to win it. So... stop crying about a decision. Go in there, work hard, and make sure I come back better next time.
How did it feel when you actually did it? When you actually won that belt on the rematch, and of course you stopped your opponent this time. You made no mistake.
Yeah, it was a dream come true. Not many people in life get a chance to make the dreams come true. Never mind, make them come true, but they don't even get the chance to. And I had that, and I saw it as a second chance, and I had to take it. And that's what I'd done. And it wasn't just the past year since the accident, what had happened, or from the start of my career. It was like it felt like every dedication, all the dedication, all the sacrifices that you'd made from being an 11-year-old boxer. It was just everything was worth it. All rolled into one. It was worth it for that moment.
Unbelievable moment. Plenty more to come, of course, within the Crawler career, but I would presume that is the match of your life and the moment in your life which sort of brought it all together. Is that fair enough to say?
Yeah, it is. I think defending the world title was very, very close to it. You might even argue. I sometimes think, did it beat it? But I think with that night, it was just... It's a night I will never, ever forget, and seeing what it meant to the people around me, and I don't think I slept for 2 days. I don't think I slept for 2 days. I remember being on Sky Sports News the next day. It was like I'd done the walk of shame. I'd come straight out the club into there. I still had last night's clothes on, and it was just like you say, it was just so satisfying after all the hurdles that I've been put in front of you to make it come true.
I think you're allowed a night out after that. I'm sure the Smith brothers were involved somewhere along the line. All this is detailed in Nice Guys Can Win. I can't highly recommend it enough. It's a brilliant book. You must be very proud of it.
No, thank you. Yeah, Dom, I think, has done a great job. Yeah. And if no one thinks of why, it's go and see Dom. But he said, I think Dom's done a great job. He's a good guy, isn't he? I'm proud of what he's done.
Get it now. Just very quickly, what's the next step for you? Of course, people anxiously waiting
honestly,
to see when you're back in.
I should know within the next few weeks what it's going to be. I've been ticking over in the gym. I've been doing a lot of sparring with Stephen Smith for his fight in Vegas, which was weekend. So it's one of them. I'm not in a bad place. I think probably March time, but I don't know who, where or what for yet. But in the next week or two, I should be a lot more clearer on that. And I look forward to 2018.
Anthony Crawler, thank you very much indeed for your time. Fascinating
story. Thanks for having
us.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.